Our guest today, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, just released their 15th studio album entitled Push the Sky Away. We're joined today by the Australian musician and author, and we're going to be hearing live performances of songs from Push the Sky Away from a concert recorded in Berlin, starting with this performance of Wide Lovely Eyes.
This is called Wide Lovely Eyes.
Live performance today from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds of one from the new album, Push the Sky Away, that is Wide Lovely Eyes. And Nick, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Okay.
Now, Now there's so many locales involved in this album. You now live in Brighton, and there's the cover photo is in, you've allowed us into your bedroom.
Yeah. I guess so.
Which may have been something you're not so sure about now. But What effect is, I know you recorded this in France, but were the songs written in Brighton, and what effect did Brighton have on the record?
Brighton is a small English seaside town directly underneath London where I live, and I think it seeped into this record a lot, and it has a lot to do with the, you know, I live by the sea, and it has a lot to do with that, and it's all over, it's all through the record.
But then you decamped to France with everybody to kind of live communally while you recorded communally. Did that work out for people in their middle age?
Yeah, we went to middle age is a nice way of putting it. I'm quite happy with that. But we went to the south of France and recorded at a residential studio for 3 weeks, it worked out really well, actually. It was such a beautiful studio, such a beautiful place. And everyone, you know, we hadn't made a record for quite a long time, so it was kind of really nice to be back together, really. A bunch of...
Much is made not so much grinding, not so much Mick Harvey on this record, and definitely a different sound. But you've said that was conscious from the beginning. You wanted to make it a quieter record.
No, I don't know about that. I don't think we knew what kind of record we wanted to make. We never really do. It's really the songs themselves dictate the way the record ends up being, you know, and the songs can go anyway. They can be any kind of song. It's a bunch of lyrics. You could do a song in a variety of different ways. The thing that happened that was a really pleasant surprise, really, was that without Mick Harvey, there was no guitar, and that may sound of course, but suddenly we realized what the music sounded like without the guitar, the kind of absence of the sort of central space-eating engine that goes on in rock and roll music, which is the electric guitar, and especially the electric rhythm guitar. Take that out, and suddenly there was this space, this beautiful space, and that came to define, I think, the sound of the record.
There's plenty of rhythm to this, kind of pulses, one would say. Those Warren's loops, or what is
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah, largely, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, when we mentioned Brighton, now Jubilee Street is in Brighton?
There is a Jubilee Street in Brighton, yeah. There's a Jubilee Street in a lot of towns.
Even if it's not called that.
Well, you know, I think that if you're going to the Jubilee Street in Brighton looking for a good time, you might be a little disappointed. Hmm. It's a Jubilee Street of the imagination, shall we say.
This is Jubilee Street, a live version from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
People down on Jubilee Street, they ought to practice.
us what they preach. Oh yeah, they ought to practice just what they preach on Jubilee Street. But here I come up the hill. I'm pushing my wheel of love. I got love in my tummy and a tiny little pain and a 10-ton catastrophe on a 60-pound chain. And I'm pushing, yeah, my wheel of love up Jubilee Street. Oh, look at me now.
Jubilee Street live on the World Cafe today. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. We're going to get a chance to talk with Nick today. I've been thinking long and hard, Nick, about your creative life. No, I was just noting the fact that, I think you mentioned
not
it.
Not too hard, I hope.
Mentioned it in an interview that you received an honorary degree from an art institution.
A doctorate.
A doctorate, yeah. Mind you, from an art institute that you were kicked out of at one point.
That's true, yeah. That was maybe my first one, or so. I have received several now, actually, but it was the first one. But yes, I was given it by the institute that I wasn't kicked out. I failed.
Okay.
I failed second year art school. I was gently ushered out.
Now, when you're a fine artist, it seems really direct what you do. You're working with whatever your medium is. You're a painter?
Am I a painter?
Yeah.
It's what I wanted to be, for sure. Ever since I was real young, before I was a teenager, I wanted to be a painter. I like that idea of, I like the whole idea as a kid of kind of being in a room and working on your own. And I used to kind of be interested in the lives of the painters and read up about that. And I wasn't that good at school, but I was good at history of art. And I thought I was good at it. I enjoyed art as well. So I went to art school, but it just wasn't to be,
What was the relationship between starting to do music and that?
I just had I had this little band on the side, I didn't really take that seriously, to be honest. It was just, it got us into clubs for free and got us free booze and girls liked us and stuff like that. But it was not my career of choice by any means. Until I failed art school. And it became by default, my career of choice.
But you keep pushing yourself in these other, a couple of novels within the last 5 years. There have been four albums, the novels. I don't know how many soundtracks that you and Warren have done. There's been a whole number of them and screenplays and all this. It's interesting. You're in collaborative ventures like a band, and you're in these really solitary ones like writing and I suppose painting too.
Yeah, I think I keep making records because even after 30 or so years or whatever it is, I'm still trying to work out how to be a musician. I never really felt like one. I've never really felt, I've always felt something of an imposter in regard to music, and felt I was more naturally inclined towards solitary labor, like novel writing, for example. And I find that easier to do, to be honest. But there's something about the kind of mystery of songwriting that I find really exciting and kind of baffling, but an exciting thing to be involved in.
Were you always?
I think at the end of the day, there's something about music itself that separates itself from the other art forms. There's something intangible and mysterious about it. I've written a lot of songs, 250 songs or whatever it is, and I still don't really completely understand the process of how you turn nothing into something. How that actually happens, and I find it very difficult to. I've thought about it a lot, but find it very difficult to articulate. Whereas a novel, it's a different, you have an idea and you sit down and you do it, It's a whole different thing.
Boy, I've heard people say the exact opposite about how much more difficult it is to do the other, but that's interesting.
To write a book?
Yeah. What about the performing aspect of it? Is that something that it is, you've always, I mean, you've been an amazing performer right from the get-go.
Well, you know, it's once again, there's a certain element of mystery about that too, about what happens in that process, that kind of transformative process. It's not dissimilar to the songwriting process, actually, in that something happens that is transformative, where you become something different for a while. And there's something about being kind of squeezed, but the kind of meat in the sandwich between the bad seeds and the audience, that the kind of pressure valve or whatever it is that goes on there, that you can just lose yourself in, you know, and become something different. It's quite amazing, really. I mean, it's amazing for me, the effect that it can have.
How has performing changed for you as you've, as we dare say, as we mentioned before, head into middle age?
I don't think it's changed that much, to be honest. Obviously, the performances are different, but the intent is still similar. I mean, the performances have become more refined, you know, but... You know, I'm a lot older now and a lot more experienced now. But I think the intent is still quite similar, and that is to sort of lose yourself in some way, become somebody different than you are. You know, to become something else.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. More of my conversations with Nick as I talk about what it was like for him coming up in Melbourne, Australia. After the break on the World Cafe. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds are our guests today. The new album is called Push the Sky Away. Nick returned to making Bad Seeds records after a break to record with the more raucous Grinder Man project. That shook things up following the Abattoir Blues release. We'll talk more after this performance from a concert recorded in Berlin. This is We Real Cool.
Thank you. Took your measurements from the top of your head right down to your toes. Yeah, you know. Who bought you clothes and new shoes and wrote you a book you never read? Yeah, you know. Who was it? Yeah, you know, we real cool. Far side of the morning, who was it? Yeah, you know, we real cool. And I hope you're listening, are you? Who was it you called the good shepherd, rounding up the kids for their meal? Who chased your shadow running out behind, clinging to your high-flying heel? Your high-flying, high-flying, high-flying heel. Who was it? Yeah, you know we're real cool. On the far side of the morning, who was it? Yeah, you know we're real. And I hope you're listening, are you? Who measured the distance from the planets right down to your big blue spinning world? Teardrops and heartbeats and nervous laughter spilling down all over you, girl. Who was it? Yeah, you know we're real cool. On the far side of the morning, who was it? Yeah, you know we're real cool. And I hope you're listening. Are you? Is 8.6 light years away. Arcturus is 37. The past is the past, and it's here to stay. And Wikipedia is heaven. When you don't want to remember no more, on the far side of the morning. Yeah, you know we're real cool. And I hope you're listening and you'll call.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds are live today on the Cafe with We Real Cool, the performance of a tune from Push the Sky Away, the new album. And, you know, I mentioned Brighton, which is where you spend some time now. You've moved around a lot. And did you recently were back in Australia touring? What's it? Does it? Is there any element of homecoming to it, or how do you feel about it now?
It's always feels like going home. Yeah, it does. But you know, I've been away too long for it to feel really like home. And I think, you know, I think because I've traveled a lot, I don't really have that sort of homecoming feeling anywhere really. I mean, I don't say that in a, you know, that's not a problem for me. It's just, I think it feels like very much where my family is returning home. I mean, my wife and my children and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I understand Australians very well. I feel very much an Australian. I feel very much an Australian when I'm living in the UK. I think Australians and English people are vastly different. Australians just take up a little, you know, they take up more space than the English do. And, you know, but so when I'm away, I feel very much Australian. But when I get back, I don't feel like I actually am. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Were you anxious to get out of Australia when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. You know, I mean, back then, Australia it didn't have its own culture. I mean, it didn't have its own definable culture. Culturally, it was what they thought it should be, which was to be English or to be American, depending on But you know, and so the idea was that you left Australia, and you kind of made it elsewhere, and then you come back to Australia, and the Australians know, you know, if you've made it somewhere else, then you can come back to Australia, and they know that you're a viable proposition. It was kind of like that back then. That was a very confused answer, but but we just didn't go back.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting you're from Melbourne, because if any place in Australia and it seems to be the cultural center, it would be that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm talking a long time ago. Mm. I'm talking to, you know, there's no support at all from the industry, for example, for anybody doing anything remotely new or original in Australia.
Mm.
Not that you needed support from the industry, but... you know, the great thing about being a musician in Melbourne and where we kind of cut our teeth really was that we knew fundamentally at our very core that there was that we would never be successful. and I think because we were doing something that was you know, a little bit different. And this created a kind of Melbourne scene at the time where bands were just doing the strangest stuff because. You didn't have the pressures of success. You made your music in a kind of vacuum of failure, and that can create some kind of extraordinary things. So there was quite a cool scene that was going on in Melbourne back in the day.
I love that expression, vacuum of failure. That's great. So
you can have it.
you were talking to a Grinderman fan, and I'm just wondering if the way you approached that record it would seem to have had more of an effect on Dig Lazarus Dig than on this record. But I'm wondering if just the letting off steam of that had any effect on Push the Sky Away.
I mean, Grinderman. For no matter what you think about Grinderman, there are a lot of people out there who aren't fans of Grinderman. There are people out there who refuse to listen to another Nick Cave record again after Grinderman. you know, it shook things up. It also shook things up within the band and changed the Bad Seeds fundamentally. And in my view, in a good way. You know, it was. I felt that after the. Abattoir Blues record, I felt that was kind of like a full stop, and I couldn't see where to go with the next record. It felt like it was so massive, the sound. There were so many people on it, and we'd created this kind of massive thing. I didn't know where to take it, and Grinderman was really a way of kind of smashing the whole thing down and starting again. And it was a very volatile move within the Bad Seeds, and personally, although other people may disagree, I think that it saved the Bad Seeds, and I actually think it's had a huge influence over Push the Sky Away, in the sense that Grinderman was about economy of instrumentation. It was about a lot of other things as well, but ultimately it was about a few people playing at the same time. And I think that, you know, Push the Sky Away is also very much about that. It's about space, you know, the space between the sounds.
Would you and the band ever have a discussion like that about it?
About what Grinderman was doing to the band?
Yeah, or about where you are now from there, that kind of thing? Or is it just naturally happen?
No, we don't really discuss that sort of thing. I mean, Grinderman was like bringing a mistress into a marriage that had been going on for a long time. You know, it either shakes things up or it destroys it. Not that I'm suggesting that to anyone out there, but you know, it felt like that, you know. And I think that it that on some level that mistress saved our marriage.
Yeah. Let's get another performance.
I may be alone in that way, in that thinking. But there you go.
Well, at least one half of the marriage feels that way. Here's another performance from the Saved Bad Seeds. This is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and this is Push the Sky Away, the title track.
Some people think that it's just rock and roll. Oh, but it gets you right down to your soul. You've gotta just keep on pushing, keep on pushing, push the sky.
Sky.
Good night. Thank you. See you again soon.
Push the Sky Away, the song from the album, recorded in concert from Berlin. And big thanks to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, our guests today on the World Cafe. World Cafe is supported in part by Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. Additional support is provided by the members of the World Cafe affiliates nationwide, including KNSQ in Mount Shasta, California, and KCCU in Lawton, Oklahoma. Shows produced at WXPM from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. A show that has some podcasts. We've got our World Cafe Next podcast and also our Words and Music podcast with full performances this week from Eels. Get that at worldcafe.npr.org. I'm David Dye, and this is The World Cafe.